Do you ever wonder where all your money went? Like every single time you look at your bank account? Honestly, it's probably all those subscriptions. I felt that way too, until I got Rocket Money. Rocket Money helped me see all the subscriptions I'm paying for, and it was eye-opening. Between streaming services, fitness apps, delivery services, it all adds up so quickly. Rocket Money is a personal finance app that finds and cancels your unwanted subscriptions, monitors your spending, and helps lower your bills. Rocket Money has over 5 million users and has helped save its members an average of $720 a year, with over 500 million in canceled subscriptions. Stop wasting money on things you don't use. Cancel your unwanted subscriptions by going to rocketmoney.com/Wondery. That's rocketmoney.com/Wondery. rocketmoney.com/Wondery.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass?
So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
From 30 Rockefeller Plaza in New York City, please enjoy this podcast edition of Late Night with Seth Meyers. Today's show features Seth's interview with baseball commentators Kevin Millar and Sean Casey. Plus, just for this podcast, Seth continues the conversation with Kevin and Sean backstage at Studio 8G. But first, a closer look.
As he continues to deal with the aftermath of his disastrous response to the humanitarian crisis in Puerto Rico, President Trump is now also dealing with an internal crisis, a simmering feud with his Secretary of State. For more on this, it's time for a closer look. After his tour of Puerto Rico, where he chided Puerto Ricans for throwing the budget out of whack and tossed paper towels into the crowd like he was at the free throw line, Trump did what he always does, bragged about his performance and made up a bizarre and completely unnecessary lie about how unprecedented his trip was. He told reporters on Air Force One, "I think it meant a lot to the people of Puerto Rico that I was there. They really responded very nicely. And I guess it's one of the few times anybody has done this. From what I am hearing, it's the first time that a sitting president has done something like this." You think this is the first time a sitting president has visited hurricane victims? This isn't even the first time you've done it. You were just in Texas and Florida a few weeks ago. Remember? Oh, no. You don't remember, do you? This is turning into 50 first dates, but for hurricanes. In a way, though, Trump is right. This is the first time a sitting president has embarrassed himself this much while trying to comfort the victims of a natural disaster. For example, after he threw supplies at hurricane victims, the crowd literally had to tell him to stop. According to the Washington Post, Trump passed out yellow bags of rice and then started tossing rolls of towels into the crowd. The crowd laughed and cheered him on. When he contemplated doing the same with the cans of chicken, the crowd gently told him no. Oh, my God. Our president had to be told not to throw cans of chicken at hurricane victims. I wouldn't be surprised if he only built Trump Tower so he could drop pennies off the roof. But of all Trump's missteps in Puerto Rico, there's one that is perhaps the most embarrassing and also the most revealing. At the church where supplies were being handed out, he encountered a church member giving out water purification tablets. Basically, these tablets turned dirty water into clean drinking water. And not only could Trump not believe it worked, he couldn't believe they were giving it away for free. Here's how that exchange went, according to the Post. "Wait," Trump said. "You put it in dirty water? And then you can drink it after 10 to 12 hours," she explained. "Would you do it? Would you drink it?" he asked. "Sure," she said. "Really?" Trump said, a disgusted look coming across his face. "Really," she said. "Is this your company or something?" Trump asked the woman, seeming suspicious of the aggressive pitch. "No," she said, "I'm part of the church." Trump genuinely cannot contemplate doing something out of the goodness of your heart. He just assumes it must be a scam. "So you give them the dirty water, but you say it's clean?" "No, it's clean." "Oh, so you clean the water, but then you sell it for double the price?" "No. We give it away for free. Oh, I get it. So while they're drinking the water, you go around and steal all their wallets? But this is yet another reminder to the evangelicals who support Trump. He doesn't understand church. What's Jesus's cut, 20%? That's very good. That's a lot of cans of chicken. But after embarrassing himself, insulting the people of Puerto Rico, and repeatedly bringing up the financial cost of the recovery, Trump, out of nowhere, seemed to throw Puerto Rico a potential lifeline. Right now, the government of Puerto Rico is dealing with an economic crisis and billions of dollars in debt, bought up by hedge funds and other Wall Street firms who have blocked any attempt to allow Puerto Rico to restructure its debt or declare bankruptcy. But as Trump was leaving the island on Tuesday, he seemed to suggest he might support forgiving Puerto Rico's debt completely.
We're going to work something out. We have to look at their whole debt structure. You know, they owe a lot of money to your friends on Wall Street, and we're going to have to wipe that out. That's going to have to be, you know, you can say goodbye to that. I don't know if it's Goldman Sachs, but whoever it is, you can wave goodbye to that.
Well, that'll be easy. I've been waving goodbye to things since you became president. Bye, Constitution. Bye, good night's sleep. Bye, half the people I know on Facebook. But forgiving Puerto Rico's debt would be a truly transformative step that would go a long way to alleviating the suffering of Puerto Ricans and make up for many of Trump's missteps in handling the crisis. So naturally, his budget director, Mick Mulvaney, went on TV the next morning to tell people, don't listen to the president.
The president seemed to suggest that he is open to wiping out the Puerto Rican debt. Is that to be taken seriously on its face?
I wouldn't take it word for word with that.
Agree. No one should ever take Trump word for word. It's far more fun to take his words and then put them in an order that you find interesting.
I have Wall Street friends. I have a lot of money. I have butthole. I have butthole. I have butthole. Goodbye.
Very proud of that. Of course, the president isn't content to botch just one crisis, which is why he's in the process of botching another, North Korea's nuclear program. The international community has been desperately pursuing every diplomatic angle to avoid what would certainly be a catastrophic war. And Trump's own government has been working with the UN Security Council, China, and even through back channels with North Korea itself to resolve the conflict peacefully. So once again, Trump threw all that out the window when he tweeted out of nowhere over the weekend, I told Rex Tillerson, our wonderful Secretary of State, that he is wasting his time trying to negotiate with Little Rocket Man. Save your energy, Rex. We'll do what has to be done. So all the careful diplomacy and bargaining and angling just goes out the window with one tweet. It's like everyone is playing an intense game of Jenga and Trump is the rambunctious golden retriever barging through the doggy door. Also, I wouldn't be too concerned that Rex Tillerson is expending a lot of energy. He looks like the guy sitting in a rocking chair outside the corner store who says, storms are coming, I can feel it in my knee. So Trump has once again undercut the diplomatic efforts of his Secretary of State, which has happened so many times that Tillerson apparently threatened to resign over the summer, according to a report yesterday from NBC News. But the fact that Tillerson threatened to resign is not the most damning part of this story. That, of course, had to do with what Tillerson called Trump behind his back.
At a meeting at the Pentagon with the president's national security team, there were cabinet officials, White House officials. The president attended. He left. The group was gathering. There were a number of people around, and the secretary called the president a moron.
Wow. And Tillerson has that great Texas accent, so you know he really stretched it out. That guy is a moron. Now, obviously, this story was based on anonymous sources, and the State Department denied it, which is why MSNBC did their own reporting on exactly what Tillerson said and issued an important clarification later that day.
My source didn't just say that he called him a moron. He said an effing moron.
This story keeps getting better and better. Seriously, I can't wait for the next update. Oh, here it is right here. Sources have further clarified that Tillerson called Trump a straight-up, nose-picking, mouth-breathing, Mr. Beltloop moron. Tillerson, of course, was forced to issue a statement at a hastily arranged press conference yesterday where he took the extraordinary step of trying to assure the American people that the president is not, in fact, a moron.
Let me tell you what I've learned about this president, whom I did not know before taking this office. He loves his country. He puts Americans and America first. He's smart.
Man, to think a guy's a moron and then be forced to publicly say he's smart. I guess when your name is Rex, you're going to be good at rolling over. Good boy, Rex. Good boy. Oh, stay away from the Jenga. Now, yesterday, while he was in Las Vegas, Trump was asked about the Tillerson story and his comments afterwards. He could not stop himself from attacking the media. Watch as he keeps saying thank you as if to stop talking and then continues to ramble.
Yeah, I'm very honored by his comments. It was fake news. It was a totally phony story. Thank you very much. It was made up. It was made up by NBC. They just made it up. Thank you all. Thank you. Total confidence in Rex. I have total confidence. Thank you very much, everybody.
You could almost see the angel and devil on his shoulders wrestling for control. Say it was fake news. No, say thank you and leave. Call it a phony story. Walk away and don't throw chicken cans. Throw the chicken, throw it. No, throw the paper towels, but not the chicken. Throw the chicken, but wrap it in paper towels, but they think it's soft. We're in a truly extraordinary situation where the president is fighting with his own secretary of state as he faces multiple foreign policy challenges. In fact, cabinet officials are apparently now so concerned about the president's volatility that several of them have forged an agreement to quit if Trump tries to fire one of them. Secretary of State Rex Tillerson, Defense Secretary Jim Mattis, and Treasury Secretary Steve Mnuchin reportedly have forged a suicide pact in which all three members of President Trump's cabinet would leave if one of them became a target of the president. Jesus, so three cabinet officials have to band together to deal with their out-of-control boss. They're treating him like he's Dabney Coleman in 9 to 5. And before you say that was a dated reference, they were all at the Emmys. So this is the situation we're in. Cabinet officials are forming suicide pacts to protect each other from the president. The president is volatile, unstable, incompetent. In other words...
a moron.
No, that's not it.
An effing moron.
Yeah, that's it. This has been a closer look.
Before we get to Seth's chat with Kevin Millar and Sean Casey, we wanted to let you know about a special treat for fans of the Late Night Podcast. Believe it or not, we're about to hit the 100th episode of this podcast. And to commemorate the event, Seth Meyers and producer Mike Shoemaker want to hear from you, the fans. Send your questions as text or audio files to podcast@latenightseth.com, and you might hear them answered on the 100th episode. Again, that's podcast@latenightseth.com. Now let's hear Seth's interview with MLB analysts Kevin Millar and Sean Casey.
Yes, our former Major League Baseball stars. One is the co-host of Intentional Talk and a 2004 World Series champion, and the other is an analyst for MLB Tonight and a member of the Cincinnati Reds Hall of Fame. Please welcome back to the show two of our favorites, Kevin Millar and Sean Casey, everybody. Welcome back, guys. Thank you. Aren't they fantastic?
You're amazing. Good to be
fifth
back.
Time. Fifth time on the show.
Yeah.
Great.
We heard Tina, this is her sixth time.
This is her sixth time. I don't want you to don't be judged by that.
Martha Stewart, seven.
Martha Stewart, seven.
So we're going to come back next week.
So you are...
I'm going to schedule us next week.
You want to take down Martha Stewart?
Yes.
How great would that be?
Yeah.
By the way,
you would already be here more than Martha Stewart if you guys could cook a little bit.
I make a mean scramble. You come over to my house, Casey, I'll make you up a nice scramble.
Okay,
cook? Good. Oh, yeah, I cook.
Cook? By the way, a scramble is not a cook.
What does that mean? By the way, yeah. Is this Pittsburgh lingo? What does that mean,
it's scramble? A Pittsburgh thing, you know, a couple eggs.
Yeah, you guys are like, yeah, okay. Yeah,
that's not a Pittsburgh thing. Everybody knows what a scramble is.
Hey, raise your hand if you know what scramble is.
I mean, I would jump from scramble to probably scrambled eggs. Plus, look at it, Sean. What else could he make?
I know it's like fried cheese or something, you know what I'm saying?
But Kevin, this made me so happy this summer. You went back, and this was an actual baseball game, the St. Paul Saints, which was an independent league team that you came up with.
Yes.
You came and you played in a minor league game this summer. This was not an exhibition, right?
No, this was real stuff. 25 years ago, I played for the St. Paul Saints. Bill Murray owns the club. He's part owner. So I'm thinking, okay, we're going to have a bobblehead doll, right? And I'm like, oh, okay, yeah, I'll come back there only if I can get one at bat. Now, I said that as a joke.
Yeah.
Okay? I'm an overweight dad. I'm like a dad's body, right? I've done a push-up in 7 years. Haven't seen live pitching in 7 years.
Yeah. Okay?
I took batting practice with my son in the garage. My son, Canyon Cash, flipping dad, because I don't want to blow out an oblique.
Sure.
Got it. Took 20 swings. That's it.
20 swings. You had to be careful. And then let's just go to the tape. This is real.
They're going to be butterflies. I don't know.
Drilled high in the air left field. Are you kidding me? Gone! No way!
I feel like I'm the natural.
It was the best.
It truly was. I didn't hit a home run in batting practice. The players, of course, you know, they all think you played in the big leagues. You're going to hit home run. Guys, I'm trying to just touch the ball.
Yeah.
And I hit a home run. It was a 1-0 pitch, and I think I blacked out. Yeah. I didn't know what happened. I get all the, look, that was the greatest thing ever. I'm like, I just blacked out. What happened? I didn't know what happened.
Did you hear, did the pitcher say anything?
No, but that night I took all the boys out. We're out there having a drink and stuff, and all of a sudden the pitcher was there. The other team was in, at the bar. I'm like, they're like, he wants to meet you. I'm like, get him over here. I want to give him a hug. Like, he's like, I thought you were a dad. I just figured I'll throw a fastball. It was a 1-0 pitch. I'm like, thank you so much.
Well, it was great to watch. And you mentioned Bill Murray was a owner of the team. He was a first base coach a few times when you played.
He was our first base coach. One day, I think I told the story, but he came to the field. He's in the same clothes. I'm like, Bill, what happened? You can't change. And he got kicked out of his hotel room for playing ball. With his kids, they broke a window, and they kicked Bill Murray out. He slept in the parking lot at St. Paul.
Wow.
Yeah. So now this is Bill. This is his little
that's
Bill.
A, yeah, that's
so,
a Bill.
Yeah, now he's rich again.
You
at the All-Star game last year, yep. Real quick, my kids are there. We're sitting down, and a guy hasn't come. And my kids are like, who's going to sit there? I don't know. Here comes Bill Murray. So I'm like, hey, it's Bill Murray. You know, my son Andrew's sitting there. So we're watching the game. All of a sudden, I see Bill Murray just reaching over, just crushing my son's fries. Boom. And he's like, and my son leaves. I was like, Dad, he's like, Bill Murray keeps eating my fries. I go, let him eat them all. Let him eat all. Bill Murray.
You got to let Bill Murray eat your fries.
Yes.
Obviously, last year, a historic year in baseball, Cubs win the World Series. And it was great because everybody was rooting for the Cubs. There was a time where anyone was behind the idea of the Cubs winning. But you, early in your career, your Reds eliminated the Cubs from the playoffs.
Yep.
And a lot of people feel sympathy for Cubs fans. You did not choose the path of sympathy.
I did not. And the reason was because when you're in Cincinnati, obviously the Cubs fans travel well. They're all there all the time. And every time we went to Chicago, they would kill us, right, all the time. And when you come out, Seth, after the games, you roll up to the bus, and there's a bar right there, and the fans would be like, hey, you know, saying some things I can't say on TV, but, yo, you guys stink, basically.
You're number one.
All these years of that. So then in 2003 with the Reds, we knock them out of the playoffs in the last couple games of the year. So out of the playoffs, we come to the bus. The fans aren't saying anything, and we're all like, oh, what are you going to say now? We finally knocked you out. So sure enough, at like 5 o'clock, you're rolling out of Wrigleyville on a Thursday. It's packed. Traffic, you know, bumper to bumper.
Yeah, all bars.
All bars. Bars everywhere. So we're like 4 blocks away. We're bumper to bumper. See this packed Cubs bar just overflowing. I go up to the bus driver. I go, let me out. He's like, what? He's like, we're in traffic. I go, you got to let me out. And Barry Larkin, I'm like, Larkin, tell him to let me out. He's like, let him out. So next thing I know, I'm full suit. I walk right into this bar. And I'm like, hey. And like everyone kind of looks at me like, who's this idiot? You know? I'm like, hey, all you Chicago Cubs fans, the Cincinnati Reds just kicked your butt like they stay in Chicago. Better luck next season, right? And I think it's really funny until like 20 guys don't think it's funny. They start coming after me, chasing me. I'm like, open the door to the bus driver. Like, oh, my God. This is such a bad idea. Like, dive on the bus, Dukes of Hazzard style. Boom, I'm in there. Slide in through the thing. And I get on the bus. And everyone's pounding on the bus. And the fans are now on our bus. But Barry Larkin said, 19 years in the big leagues, greatest thing he's ever seen.
I'm new to fatherhood. This is one of the greatest things I've ever seen. You were recently traveling with your son.
I was.
You have, how many kids? You have 3 or 4?
I have 4.
You so both have 4, right?
It's lonely in Beaumont, Texas.
Yeah.
In Dawson, right?
And you traveled with your son, which is really sweet, a father-son trip.
Great dad.
But you sent sent a photo. It seems like, Kevin, I want to say, it seems like you're in a first-class seat, and it seems like your son is not. That is.
I gotta be honest with you though.
Yeah.
He's 10. I've won Dad of the Year for 6 straight years.
Yeah.
I didn't want the 7th year, but I figured like I'm not buying him a first class ticket. The kid's 10, so I put him back there and coach, and he's like, hey, Dad, maybe a hot chick six. You're 10, bro. What are you talking about?
You've been married 20 years.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
And I heard this story, which is fantastic. You went out of your way for your groomsmen at your wedding to give them a piece of baseball.
Yes, memorabilia.
Memorabilia.
Yeah, so it was my rookie year. I'm hitting like 250. I'm like, I'm going to be out of here soon. Like, if I don't start hitting, I'm, you know, they're going to send me down. But I'm like, my wedding's coming up. So I was thinking, I got 10 groomsmen for some reason, you know what I mean? And I'm like, I gotta find a way to get these guys something cool, like some memorabilia. So I'm like, I'll start collecting bats, right? So I play first base, holding runners on. Like, I remember my first bat was Tony Gwynn, comes to first, knock the left. I'm like, hey, Tony, I know you don't know who I am. I only been up here 3 weeks, and I'm not a good player. But anyway, is there any chance you could send over a signed bat for my groomsman? Tony was like, all right, that's all right. So I get him, Mark McGwire, Sammy Sosa, Larry
Walker.
And
they just, so after the game, they would send a bat over.
Yeah, send a bat over.
That's so nice.
It was so nice. It was unbelievable. Yeah. So the last guy, I'm at 9 bats. I need one more groomsman, right? Ricky Henderson comes, like, oh, wait, it's Ricky Henderson. She comes at first, like, hey, Ricky, how you doing? Says nothing. You know, he was one of the guys who didn't talk to you at first. So, but he talked in the third person. Like, if Ricky swung and missed, he'd be like, Ricky, don't swing at that pitch. Ricky, don't swing at that pitch. Right? Right? So I'm like, I'm holding him on. I'm like, hey, Ricky, I'm so nervous, but I'm like, I got to do it for my groomsman. I'm like, any chance you could send over a signed bat? I need one more bat for my wedding, for my groomsman. He looks at me, he's like, Ricky, don't sign back. Ricky steals bases. Bam, he stole second. I'm like, all right, looks like I ain't getting that 10th bat. But what I did was I signed another bat for my groomsman had good 8 good bats and 2 from me.
Oh, well, that's really good. And one of them said, in your handwriting, Ricky Henderson.
Ricky Henderson, yes. Exactly.
Thank you guys for being here, man. It's always such a pleasure to see you. Kevin Millard, Sean Casey, MLB Network, exclusively televised the Red Sox at Houston Astros on Thursday and the Yankees at Cleveland on Friday.
Hey, everybody, this is Seth, and I'm here with two of our favorites, Kevin Millar and Sean Casey, fresh off your 5th appearance on the show.
Yes, it's amazing. Well, Martha Stewart's who I'm going after, I'm going to be honest with you. Yeah. 7 times.
Really?
We're going to Martha. Yeah.
Although Tina Fey had 5.
And I mean, now she's 6.
Now she's 6.
Sneaky tonight, hot, tonight. By the way, Tina Fey.
Yeah.
And was sneaky, I the only one thinking
I would
that?
Say Tina's sneaky hot for going on 2 decades right
oh,
now.
Oh, yeah. I know.
And she's
Are
rich.
You just realizing that?
Yeah, she is.
She's
so a catch.
When you're rich, it makes you hotter, obviously, because look at David Ortiz. He was ugly when he came to the Red Sox.
Uh-huh.
Then he left the Red Sox, and all of a sudden he's really, really hot.
Yeah.
Glasses, beards trimmed up. When you got money, you're hotter. Look at Sean.
Yeah.
He's
I just
hot.
Get hotter with age.
Yeah. He's sweating hot. You know?
Now, did you guys were SNL writers together? You and
yeah.
Back
she was day? She was already a legend when I started.
Oh, she was?
I even knew her before SNL as somebody in Chicago who I'd seen perform. She was like a half generation ahead of me in Chicago. Right. So it was a huge deal to work with Tina, and I learned so much from her because she was the head writer. She was running the shop right. when I was there. And so, you know, it's that thing of sometimes you get really lucky in the situation you land
right.
in. I think there were times where you could start at SNL where you're there with the wrong group of people and you don't learn anything and people are out to get you.
Right.
I want to actually ask about this. I'm going to use this as a segue because you guys both strike me as great clubhouse guys. I bet that would have been your reputation over the years. Probably really good to rookies when they came in.
Mm-hmm.
When you hear there's a bad clubhouse situation, how many guys does it take to turn a clubhouse to a bad clubhouse? And obviously, don't name names, can one guy make a clubhouse a bad thing? Or is it one of those cancers where it just kind of spreads amongst multiple guys?
I'll be honest with you. It takes one guy to make it a little bit miserable. And when I say that, a selfish teammate, a guy that doesn't want to, you know, do the things that we're going to do as a team, whatever that be, if we're going to early hit. Like, one thing about, and I'll use an example, I'll use a name, Derek Jeter. When he, like on Sundays, let's just do this as an example. Sundays could be optional batting practice, okay? That means, you know what, we don't have to hit on the field, hitting the cages, game time's 105. But when you see Derek Jeter on the field hitting and taking ground balls, and your best player on the team does that work, it's nice to follow that guy, right? So when you have, there's no problem when the leader on your team is a hard worker and a good guy. When you have a guy that pulls on that separate, you know, that different rope that we always say, and now, what are we hitting on the field for?
Yeah.
Oh my, this is so tired. And then starts the chirping. It's like high school stuff. Like, bro, timeout. We're playing in the show. You're making a ton of money. Chicks dig the long ball. You're going to go deep in BP.
Stop the drama.
Stop it right now. We're in Anaheim. There's going to be some, you know, stuff going on. This, my point being is that you gotta kind of try to get, no one's ever perfect. You're not going to have 25 perfect guys.
Mm-hmm.
But you got to get the same soul going, you know? Yeah. And if you have that one guy, he better be really good or he's gone soon.
I remember in, I think it was 2004 with the Reds. We used to, after every win, we used to go in and sing Toby Keith's Whiskey for My Man, Beer
yes.
for My Horse, right? We used to, and the big thing with the rookies were, you have to know the words. Like, here we pass them out, boom, you got to know the words. If you don't know the words, well, I don't know, we did some crazy stuff.
Can you sing
stuff,
the first line for us, by the way, by any chance?
Justice is one thing you should always find. You got to saddle up your boys. You got to draw a hard line.
How about that?
I do want, for our listeners, I want you to know that Sean does not have a lyric sheet. That was fully from his mind.
Improvised.
Yeah. Now, I want to ask real quick, because, you know, I can picture a lot of baseball players that I would think, oh, they know Toby Keith.
Right.
Baseball, obviously, you got a lot of guys from different backgrounds. Oh, you probably had some
Spanish
players.
I had the Latino guys that didn't even know English. They're like, justice is the one thing you should always find.
Spanglish
in there. But I remember there was a guy on the team that you know, was kind of, you know, dividing us a little bit.
Ken Griffey Jr.
And I remember, no, it wasn't Ken Griffey Jr.
Oh, sorry. That's
but I remember bringing in one of the guys, and at the end of that, you know, when at the end, we whatever the line was at the end, I can remember the beginning, but the end line, I would run through and give a quick, you know, and we loved it. Like, I have video of it, but I would bring him with me. And I remember doing that, like, started bringing him back into the clubhouse. So, like, mm-hmm. I remember, you know, when you know that clubhouse chemistry is a big deal, I don't care what anyone says, you stop the stat stuff and all that stuff matters, having those guys. But when you start losing guys, you know, I know as a guy that was kind of one of those glue guys, I always find a way to try and bring them back in, you know, be a part of it, man. If you don't like what's going on in the clubhouse, be a part of it.
We have a great team.
What I'm saying.
Yeah.
You have a team, 12, 15, 25 people, that they're a team.
Yeah.
Get one that's not really into you. Or not into the scene, right? Or doesn't want to feel like doing this, or doesn't want to go get a Starbucks, or doesn't want to pull the curtain, or doesn't want to give the mic up anybody. Like, it can kind of like weigh that team down.
Yeah.
That's kind of the same thing.
So I want to ask about the role of a baseball manager. I think for a fan, you watch, you're basically, you judge it on in-game decisions. You judge it on, they should be starting this guy, not starting this guy. Can't believe they bunted there. Can't believe they brought in this pitcher. How much of it, though, is the part we can't see? How much of it is keeping everybody together, keeping everyone in the same line? And how quickly, as a player, do you know this guy has it as a manager or this guy doesn't?
You know quickly. I think some of the best managers I played for, when I first came up, I know Jack McKeon was, I love Jack. And, you know, his son Casey drafted me. They traded for me from Cleveland to Cincinnati. But he was always
second-round pick. Sean Casey signed for $427,000 with the Cleveland Indians. Continue on, Sean.
$223,000 spent. Sorry. On a $70,000 loan to the Richmond Spiders. Other than that, no big deal. No money left. My dad was like, "Hope you make the big league, son." I was like, "Where'd all my bonus money go?" It's unbelievable. But you have a certain manager that you know. Man, this guy gets it. This guy's, you know, he's got the pulse of the team. I remember when I was struggling, one of my in my first year, Jack McKeon said, "Hey, listen, you're going to hit third every day. If you hit 200, we don't care. You're going to be in there every day." That all of a sudden freed me up to say, "Oh man, if I go 0 for 4, it's okay. Like, I don't have, oh, you know, I'm in there every day." And I started getting it going, you know? So those kind of guys, but I look back at the end of my career with Jim Leland and Terry Francona.
Yeah.
Come on, man. The best. The absolute best I ever played with.
So you went to the Tigers in midseason? Was that?
Yeah, the trade at the deadline in 06. I was with the Pirates. Uh-huh. Literally the worst team in the game. Worst team in the game. And then all of a sudden, I went to the best team in the game with the Tigers.
And so how, when you come into a team in midstream like that, right. So what's your first interactions with Leon?
So great. So...
You smoke, Sean? Great.
Jim Leland, for those who don't know, sort of famously chain smoker, old school.
Old school. You know, back when he was the Buccos, it'd be in his hands, and the big leagues were like, you know, you can't do that.
I lost my nose hairs as a rookie because you'd go in after ground out to short, and you come in to go potty, and there's 17 cigarettes. This is a true story now. Lit. "Well, Jim, Skip, I can't go to the potty over here. I can't breathe." "Hey, Rook. Okay, yep, great point."
Okay, so the first day I'm with them, you know, I just get traded from Pittsburgh, and you know, we're down in Tampa. "Can you make it down here?" "Yeah, I can make it down here." Boom.
No, I do want to, I mean, sorry to interrupt.
Yeah, yeah.
You're from Pittsburgh. Must be great to play for the Pirates, but they're terrible.
Dream come true to play for the Pirates. You know, loved them growing up. Was so thankful to be there, but by the end of July, we're the worst team in baseball.
So are you happy when you hear the news?
So I was happy. Yeah. I was happy to, you know, to get traded. And I got traded listen to this, Seth. You'll appreciate this little Pittsburgh heritage in you. You got Andy Van Slyke's the first base coach. Like, those were my years. Yeah. 90, 91, 92, sure. Bonds, Bonilla, Van Slyke, Jay Bell, mm-hmm. Doug Drabeck, all those guys. Zane Smith, right?
Yep.
All those, Spanky LaValle.
Kent DeCovey, Bill Mallock.
Jose Lean.
Chico Lean. Right? Yeah. So I show up. I'm traded to Detroit. Jim Leland's the manager. Mm-hmm. Gene Lamont's the third base coach, former Bucket.
Yeah.
Lloyd McClendon's in the bullpen coach, I think. Don Slott's our hitting coach. Andy Van Slyke's our first base coach.
It's a dream.
So for me, it was a dream. So it's like, went from the Pirates to the Pirates.
To the old
Kid
Pirates.
Rock, Eminem. You know, now I really made it.
It's unbelievable. So I'm talking to the reporters, and Leland grabs me. "Hey, I need to talk to him real quick. Because, hey, I got to go, guys. Skip needs me." So Skip brings me out of the room, and it's Gene Lamont, Lloyd McClendon, and Skip. He's like, "All right." He's like, "You know Gene Owens." "Oh, yeah, you guys, you know, I know, obviously know those guys. This is my ninth year in big leagues." So I'm like, "Cool." He's like, Gino, go ahead and give Case the signs. So Gino's like, all right, Case, here we go, man. Going to go through the signs.
So these are third base coach signs, so you know,
so, right,
hit and run.
This is my first day with the Tigers. Yeah. So I just, you know, you got new signs. Every team has new signs. So I got to get the signs. He's like, all right, Gino, give me the signs. So, all right, Case, stay with me. I'm going to go through some signs. Boom, I go to my ear. It's hot. Now stay with me. I go to my hat. It's a hit and run. Okay? And he goes, I'm not going to give you a bunt because we've seen your act bunt. It's terrible. So we're obviously not going to bunt you. So then Leland pops in. He's like, all right, now, Case, now listen to me. He's like, when you get on first, you single or walk. I don't want you looking at Gino at third. I want you looking in the dugout, right? Okay, now look at me. You don't look at Gino. Look at the dugout. If I get on the second step and we catch eyes, he goes, stay with me. As soon as we catch eyes, if I jump up and never come back down, you steal.
Not known. Sean Casey, not known on the base paths. Yeah. Yeah.
And like 3 weeks later, I got thrown out from left. So he was right.
Now, both played for Francona.
Yeah.
And now he is embarking on something right now, which would be a very equivalent to what Theo did, which is wins with the Red Sox, wins with the Cubs. If Terry could do this with the Red Sox and Cleveland, I mean, he's the first ballot of Hall of Famer. Probably already is.
Yeah, he really already is. I mean, the streak, they went 22 straight this year, okay? You know, and let's be honest, Cleveland wasn't on the up and up when he took the job.
Right.
They've totally turned around. He has a unique gift of bringing out the best in you as a player, which the manager's job is that. You know, at the end of the day, Joe Torre managed the Yankees. There are some great players there.
I mean,
Joe Torre probably wouldn't have won with the Pittsburgh Pirates when Sean was over there, right? Right.
Yep.
So, when you have great players, it's how do I get the most out of them? Terry Francona does that well, but definitely a Hall of Famer. This guy, this guy's what he's done to this organization already. You know, and we can go back to Philadelphia. Not a Hall of Famer, right? When he was managing the Phillies, he was not a Hall of Famer. And he was a bench coach of Oakland, so we always had a joke. I don't know if you knew this as a Red Sox fan. I don't know if I've told you, you and Ben Affleck and Matt Damon and Bill Cosby and all the guys that would come in the clubhouse. I would like to tell you is that if we can keep Terry Francona out of the game, we have a chance to win.
Yeah.
That was our skit. If Tito, if we could keep you out of the game, we're going to win. You get him close. This guy's an amazing manager. And, the job he did last year in the World Series, amazing. Almost outmanaged Joe Maddon. Just they didn't win it. But you saw just the moves and bringing in Andrew Miller in the fourth, fifth inning. And all of a sudden it was like, he started this whole bullpen trend.
Yeah.
Like, oh, you don't have to be a closer and have to be in a closer situation. No. This is a key scene right now, and I think that's what makes a great
And you know what? One thing with Tito, too, you saw his personality with the Indians. Like, when they were on that streak, and because we all start tuning in, right? You start tuning in. They get to 16, 17. What does Tito's always preach? One game at a time. Let's win tonight. And every guy they went up to, hey, man, we're not really thinking about the streak. And I really think that was legit. To win a big league ball game, Kevin and I were talking about, it's not easy to win one, let alone 22, 23 in a row. And I think Tito always preached that. Listen, got to win tonight. Figure out a way to win tonight. How we got to match
he's
up tonight.
He's like a player, bro. Like, when I tell you this, like, and I mean, he's going to do goofy stuff. Like, you roll in and, hey, Seth, get in here. I want to go over the signs. You walk in there and he's on the pot. He's butt naked on the pot. Like, what? Skip, what are you doing? I just thought you want to go to the butt defense. So he keeps things loose, and people at home are going, well, what is he talking about? I get it, and that makes sense. What am I talking about? But when you go through 162 games, it's miserable, and it goes through the same over this pack and unpack. But when you got a manager that's kind of funny, it keeps things light.
Well, it feels like, you know, it's such a different thing. I would imagine, you know, when you're an NFL coach, that's such an intense world, and you have 16 really games. Intense moments. Right. Whereas the long season, you have moments of levity. You have to kind of tell people to take it light because otherwise you just burn out, it seems
the
like.
The Giants right now, season's over, right? They're 0-4 and you're like, it's over, right? That means 4 games. We can lose 7 in a row and you're like, oh, yeah, let's get them next week. You play 162, so what you say is right, and you're with each other so much. Mm-hmm. So the ego's got to be checked in. I'm sorry, man. You're in the shower together. You're laughing together. You're looking at each other together. You're eating together. Like, there's a lot of, and you fail a lot together. So.
And I think one thing about baseball, too, I always tell guys, like, you know, don't ever think you got to figure it out. Because we've been, you're raking for 3 weeks. Oh, yeah, I got to figure it out. Guess what?
Judge.
You're about to go 0 for 40. Yeah, you just never have it figured out. And the thing about Aaron Judge, too, about guys getting on him, I go, guys, this guy just dominated the first half of the year. He, at some point, is going to struggle. Hey, he struggled for 6 weeks, so be it. Then dominated in September again.
That's crazy.
Baseball. It's a tough sport.
Yeah.
It's a grind, night in and night out.
And he never changed, to his credit. I love this kid for being such a young player. He never changed his demeanor. If you notice, he struck out every single at-bat for about 8 weeks.
Yeah.
Not six, eight. He struck out 374,000 times, it felt like, and never changed. And then what he kept working, and now he's back. But that's the unique gift. Like, you have to learn how to fail and do it with class, if that makes sense.
It's also incredible with Aaron Judge. You realize every time you think, the Jeters, they're gone. Who are going to be our next heroes in baseball? It's so wonderful how it just replenishes itself. And all of a sudden you think, oh, wow. I mean, as somebody who cares about the Red Sox, you see Aaron Judge and you realize, this guy's going to be the bane of my existence.
How about Didi Gregorius takes over Jeter? He's better.
Yeah.
He's got 25 homers, 85 ribbies. Better defensively, better arm strength. Like, you're going, no, not than Derek Jeter. I'm not saying he's better than him over 20 years and with 9 rings.
No, I think he has fewer phone numbers.
Way fewer.
So, if you were a fan who did not have a team, if your team was not in this hunt right now, going into the postseason, are the Indians the story? Is that who you should, if you have no rooting interest, is that who you throw your lot behind? Who's the best story going into the playoffs?
I'll let you go first, Shani.
You know, for me, listen, there's great stories all around. You know, the Yankees, Boston, you know, Astros are a great story, especially because they were the 2017 Sports Illustrated when Tom Verducci.
Three years ago, Ben Reeder
said that they were going to be 2007. I just, listen, for me, watching the Indians play, Tito, Andrew Miller, all these guys, Kluber, Jose Ramirez, that whole team, to me, them coming so close last year, Seth, and getting so close. I don't know. For me, I would love to see the Indians win it this year.
For me, with the Astros. You know why? Yeah. 2013 Boston bombing.
Mm-hmm.
City rallied around, big poppies, quotes of, this is not my effing city, they're not going to mess with our effing city. Great. The Astros, Hurricane Harvey was angry. Yeah. Irma's been angry. There's been hurricanes that have been angry. So Beltran donates $1 million to Puerto Rico. Houston's under the water. Like, I think there's something to a city rallying around.
Yeah.
So once your team's out, that would be a city or a team I'm rooting for.
Yep.
You know, okay. Because there's still healing going on. We forget that. A week passes, and all of a sudden everybody's done watching CNN. Like, all right, next one. What's the next tragedy? There's still millions of people out there that have no homes and cars. And so I think there's something to that.
I think those are both great choices, and I think it's going to be fun to watch.
You're going to Boston?
I hope I'll make it to a game. Okay. I will say last night, I always feel bad for the Twins. It feels like they've been knocked out by the Yankees so much, but that was just a reminder how exciting these one-and-done games are.
Yeah.
And
the place was rocking, too.
Do you like Boston this year, just real quick? I mean, give me the Seth Meyers feel.
I feel good about Boston. I like... Certainly the fact that you have all these guys that they came up through the system that are finally coming into their
full... Benintendi looks awesome.
Yeah, their full flower.
That's right.
You know, I will say, and this is just me being too hard, the Red Sox are a little bit like the Yankees now when you look at all the guys. When the fact that David Price might be coming out of the bullpen, you realize, wow, not a lot of teams can afford to pay that much money for now a bullpen.
32 pitches.
Yeah.
Right.
And so that is the weird shift for me from 2004 to now.
Mm-hmm.
Of just watching the Red Sox and realizing in a weird way the Yankees are kind of a different team.
Mm-hmm.
It's flipped a little bit.
They actually smile now. They actually have fun.
Yeah.
That's what you're saying.
Yeah. I don't know. Do you feel like this Red Sox team is a fun-loving bunch?
No, I really don't. I love them. I really do, but I don't. They don't scare me.
That's
I guess they don't scare
me
because
he's the leader.
Well, no, it's just they don't scare me. Like when you miss 34 in that lineup, like we don't have an Aaron Judge to replace him. I think they should have signed Edwin Encarnacion.
Yeah,
I really do. I think they missed the ball on getting him from the Blue Jays. They let him go to the Indians. They don't have that dynamic threat, so they're last or by the bottom in home runs.
Yeah,
they have a great little athletic outfield. Cute. Benintendi's an unbelievable player. Betts is an unbelievable player. Jackie Bradley. Ceiling's high.
Really fun to watch those guys.
But Bogarts, good, bad, whatever. Who's the gets in that batter's box in the seventh with two outs and is going
Fear.
Deep?
Yeah.
I don't know.
Is Poppy going to make the Hall of Fame?
100%.
Man, I tell you what, now 100%. I just think one as a person, one as an ambassador to this game, and one as a player. This guy,
if there's ever a case for anything outside of the stats to weigh the balance, to tip the balance. I mean, Poppy's a guy.
Three rings.
Yeah, in three rings. How he got the rings. Even this is my city.
Yeah,
city.
All that
I mean,
stuff.
That's all Hall of Fame
is
stuff.
He, people, I always love when you go to Boston, they always talk about the Mount Rushmore of Boston.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Big Poppy.
Bill Russell, Tom Brady.
Larry Bird.
Who's the hockey player.
Or
I mean, come on. And I have to think, you don't think David Ortiz
I think
David's, is on that Rushmore?
I think David's
well, I think, you know, obviously you can't make an argument he's a better player than Ted Williams, but Ted Williams had that the opposite relationship with the fan base.
Right. Overall.
You know, that was just a love affair with David Ortiz from the jump. And
from 2003 I like talking on. About players that I've seen, so it's hard. But like Ted Williams, right? Like Babe Ruth, when I start down, I'm like, oh man, I missed that one.
Yeah.
I really did. I missed 700 of them.
You talk about leaders, though, even Big Poppy, like whenever you land in a new city, you're on the bus, Big Poppy's on the mic.
Mm-hmm.
Getting everybody riled. Tim Wakefield's yelling stuff in the back, smoking a couple of heaters. You're like, oh, yeah, the grumpy old man's yelling at Big Poppy. But Poppy's going, like, I'm saying, he don't have to do that.
Manny didn't even know what city we're in. Like, we land, we're like, hey, we're here playing in Seattle. Poppy, I thought we were in Cincinnati. No, Manny. We're in Seattle. We're on Pacific time.
I do, you know, and I don't want to, I mean, here's my other issue with the 2017 Boston Red Sox. I'm very aware, and I don't want to be this isn't negative, but there's no way I will ever care as much about a Red Sox team as the 2004 Boston Red Sox. I even knew when it happened. It was, it will never beat this. It was both the greatest relief of my life, and there was something a little sad of,
so true.
This is the when your dream comes true.
Right.
Yeah.
Open your eyes, like, it's happy. Parents are happy, grandparents are happy, generations are happy, but then, like, man, like the 07 World Series isn't the same. 13,
a
little bit the same because of Boston, the bombing. I think 13 was better than 07 because there was something you rallied behind, even if you weren't a Red Sox fan.
Yeah.
But you're right. The 04 team was special. I don't just say that because I was on it, but I do, but I don't.
It was like 2004 was that moment where you married the homecoming queen, and now it's like 13 years later, the marriage is in. You know, like,
boy, this is
she's not that into you anymore.
No. It's kind of like snuggle bunnies over, get the kids ready for school. Like,
right? But it was.
But I think one thing about the 2004 Red Sox, and I tell you what, like, I always remember Kev talking about, you know, hey, don't give us what we got, Schilling, we got Pedro. Remember that clip they always play? But I think being down 3-0, I think that's why it was
to the Yankees.
To the Yankees, 3-0.
That's what I mean.
That's tough. Listen, it's tough to sweep any team, the Padres and the Big Leagues, to win four against the Yankees down 3-0 in the place.
And it was just, it's a graphic. It's a graphic forever. Like that, you know, because anytime.
It's in the cars. And I always tell you, sometimes you just look, it doesn't matter. Like A-Rod, Giambi, Jeter, Bernie, Matsui, Gary Sheffield, Posada like everybody's rich, right? And then there's like Billy Miller, Orlando Cabrera, Millar, Bellhorn, like, huh? I get it. It doesn't make sense. It was in the cards.
I'm going to close with here's my Billy Miller story, because he did a great service to me, which I threw out the pitch once at Fenway,
right?
And I decided to do it from the mound.
How'd you do?
Here's the thing. I went beforehand. I went and I was throwing to my brother at a Little League field.
Love it.
Morning
love
of.
It. Love it.
And I said, "What do you think?" And he goes, 50-50. Because it genuinely, literally, I'd either gun it to the screen or have
it. Don't bounce it.
And when you do it, it's usually either a ball boy or a ball girl is the catcher.
Yeah.
And Billy Miller came out and said, I'll do it. And I will say, Billy Miller really picked it for me. Because I threw it 59 and a half feet. And Billy got out there, never hit the ground.
He extended it.
He got it. He framed it for me. So Billy Miller, with all due respect, my favorite player in the 2000s.
You have some Billy Miller in you, too. Like, you guys could be like, if he said, hey, Billy's my cousin, they'd be like, yeah, Seth.
Yeah, that's true.
Like, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Big Poppy, in the movie? Your cousin. I was like, Seth, come on. That Saturday Night Live skit.
All right, guys, we're going to go catch Martha Stewart next time out. Thank you guys for the thank you for the post show chat.
Back, all right, I'll bring my scramble.
Scrambled eggs.
Do it.
Want more Late Night with Seth Meyers? Be sure to follow the handle at Late Night Seth on Facebook, YouTube, Twitter, Instagram, and Snapchat. You can also watch full episodes of Late Night at LateNightSeth.com or on the NBC app. And please tell your friends who are fans of Seth Meyers to subscribe to the podcast on iTunes.
In the climate-ravaged year of 2072, the city of Pura stands as a miraculous green haven, a geoengineered paradise that protects fortunate residents from the global catastrophes of heat domes, fires, floods, and droughts. Demetria Lopez heads up Pura's public relations, tirelessly promoting the city's idyllic image. But when she stumbles upon a dark secret that, if exposed, would be the downfall of Pura's existence, she must decide who and what she is willing to protect. From Wondery, the makers of Academy and Dr. Death, The Last City stars actors Reyes Sehorn, Jeannie Tirado, and Maury Sterling. Follow The Last City on the Wondery app or wherever you get your podcasts. You can binge all episodes of The Last City early and ad-free right now by joining Wondery Plus.